You are about to experience Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Fortunately, you are about to hear lots of opinions, but rarely any facts. Impersonations might occur, but good luck trying to figure them out. This program is not intended for kids or the easily offended. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. You press play. It's too late to stop. Get ready to podcast.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. It is I, DJ Impact, with Sin City Steve and Rob Bossolari. And welcome to our special edition of our three count. We will be just discussing our thoughts on Sting's retirement. And we thought that this should be appropriate when someone put such a longevity within this this profession. We should definitely have our thoughts on to that. We don't have Matt Michaels with us tonight. He should be back with us next week. So with that, fellas, let's get right into it. Let me be the first one. This might be new to you, Rob. Definitely not new for Sin City Steve. In me talking about, as I was into pro wrestling as a kid, I was a WWE loyalist. I regret many things now decisions I made back then, knowing how much now that I have missed. And one of those things is with WCW. I really just paid no attention. I was all WWE, didn't care what was happening. I was like, whatever those guys, whatever, fuck them, whatever. Now, there were few times that happened.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
I know, right?
Yeah. I wish I'd watched that AEW.
Yeah.
And then Shane McMahon bought it. And then he got accused of sexual harassment and he had to sell it.
There were some moments, though, that happened during WCW that you was making noise. You had to turn over and say, okay, what are you doing? And of course, those were NWO. When you're hearing about Nash and what's his name being over there? Paul. Yes, thanks. Makes you turn the channel. Look, when you're hearing about Goldberg and all the matches and what he's doing and big matches with that and Hogan and filling up a stadium for their big show. Okay, I got to turn over and see what's going on. So I say all that to say I didn't really watch, but I did know one thing for sure. And that was Sting was a name that I was hearing as that being one of their top guys over there at that moment. And I, again, didn't get a chance to watch a lot of the Sting matches, but the very few that I did got a chance to see, they were exciting. I can kind of see why he was growing such a fan base with it. I really didn't get my starting experience, and I know this is crazy to hear, when he shows up at WWE.
Great.
Wow.
Great. So you saw the absolute worst incarnation of Sting.
Thank you for having me on this show. I have to part ways now.
I know. I'll go sit in the corner after I'm gone. All right? After I'm done with this, I'll go sit in the corner as I should.
You didn't even see him in TNA?
I didn't.
When he had the cage match with Mick Foley at TNA.
Listen, did you hear what I said? I was a loyalist to the World Wrestling Federation. Okay, because that's what they were at that time. All right. And then as they continue to go, that's just where my love was at. Okay. ECW wouldn't even got any attention if they wasn't partnering at that particular time. And they were doing some great shit. I know. All right. So I'm just being honest. It sucks. And yep.
What does everybody want? Head. What does everybody need? Head. You didn't see that?
I missed it. So All that to say, when I see him have his match against Triple H at Walmart, I'm not Walmart, Jesus, at I'm looking at the W's, Jesus, WrestleMania 31. Okay, I was excited to see it, and I actually wanted Sting to win that match. Buddy, that didn't happen, and I don't know.
For Sting, good God.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sting coming listen, down.
I tell you what, I'm gonna go. I tell you what, I'm gonna go sit in this corner right quick. I'm just being honest. My whole point is hey. Though, is that I know that Sting has had a very long career.
Do you know?
Well, I was aware of him. I just didn't watch the matches. Okay, I was a loyalist. I feel bad. Hey, guess what? Now that I got all these networks and everyone's buying everyone, one day when I make all the money in the world, I'm gonna sit on my couch and just go through everything. Right. And I'm gonna have my moment in the sun. That's not
so all you know of Sting is Seth Rollins giving him the buckle bomb. That's all no you shit. Know of Sting is Seth Rollins giving him the buckle bomb and then rolling him up. That I'm is Sting's it. Legacy to oh, you man. Is getting buckle bombed.
I'm being real. And
hey, at least you're admitting it, man.
I'm admitting it, and I apologize. I will have my moment of going to watch some of the best of Sting matches, but I say all that because I want to pass it over to you two because I really want to know what your thoughts were. Not just talking about the last match, but we're talking about his career. Maybe you guys apparently seen more Travis, things. What was your highlights? What was your highlights watching and growing up with Sting, you know, and to the point of last week being his end? I mean, I'll let you fellas go ahead. What you take it from here? I'm going to learn a lot from you too.
He had a banger of a cage match on TNA with fucking Mick Foley that rivaled the Mick Foley Hell in a Cell with Taker. He had some amazing matches there where he started doing the Joker Sting where he was just crazy clown paint going ta-ta. Main Event Mafia Sting was great where you saw him come out more as Steve Borden. And the idea was a Main Event Mafia. You had to be a world heavyweight champion. So it was Sting, Joe, Kurt Angle, and they let Magnus in. And he would become a champion a little bit later. WCW Sting. Fucking A, when he comes out, Wolfpack Red, like a goddamn demon. I mean, Sting didn't even come out looking like the Crow right out of the gate. It evolved. He came out with kind of like a half white. He came out as Surfer Sting with white face paint. And we were like, okay, this is a little bit different. But then, I mean, they even did gimmicks where they brought WCW, had the NWO bring in a fake Sting as kind of a play on the fake Diesel that WWE had. And he beat the shit out of fake Sting and just inserted himself into the NWO. I mean, there were so many fucking great stories there. And even if you watch the NWO Sting at a surface level, it's entertaining because wherever Sting goes, he automatically becomes the leader of any faction. Wherever he goes, he's not inserting himself like other guys will say they insert themselves, they beat. No. They crown him. They anoint him as the leader. Sting is great. The Aces and Eights. When DNA did Aces and Eights and they beat the shit out of their first victim was Sting. Three guys came out in masks and biker cuts and beat the living shit out of Sting. Fucking incredible storylines always circling around Sting.
So let me ask you this. During those times, that was like he was your Stone Cold, The Rock at the time?
He's different than them.
Okay.
Because with all of those things, what is the backstory with those guys? Those guys are heels that won you over. Mm-hmm. Sting was always a face, even when he was in a heel group. He never changed who he was. Okay. So you could put him in a heel group. I'm not saying he was going to make Razor Ramon and Diesel and Hulk Hogan faces, but they went, fuck, we cannot break this guy. He has an integrity to him. So he's going to be a leader in our group. He might break off and do his own thing like they did Wolfpack for life, but he's still Sting. You never once wonder where you're at with Sting. There's never, ever a time when you're watching a Sting match going,
What am I going to get out of this guy? Later on with John Cena, he just became that joke of a face, of a baby face. But Sting was always the guy you're like, oh, fuck, this guy's a pillar. He's the one wrestler you could say Sting is a pillar. Sting is the guy I'm looking up to. I'm rooting for Sting. I know this guy is going to do right.
Okay.
Thank you, American Bam Bam. Anytime absolutely. I watch Sting come out with a baseball bat, right. I know that if he's beating somebody up, then it's the right call. If I don't exactly. know who he was about to hit, 2 seconds before that bat connects with someone's fucking skull, you go, which way is he going to go? Oh, because Sting went that route, that's where the whole audience went.
Yep.
The audience in WWE decides eventually which way things are going to go. The audience said, fuck The Rock, too late, Cody. But fuck The Rock, too late, Cody. The audience said, oh, you want to make the man Becky Lynch a heel? For a month, they tried to push her as a fucking heel 7 seasons ago. They kept pushing her as a heel. The man was a heel that went babyface because the fans demanded it. Sting rolls out. You go where Sting takes you. And you can write that story anywhere you go. When they had him in WWE, they did him a disservice because Sting was, yeah, he is, Sting went to WWE as an understood babyface, but because WWE doesn't know what to do with these people, they don't know what to do with legends that come from other promotions. They don't know.
That's the key thing right there. Other promotions.
If you come from another promotion and you're a goddamn legend, they're going to treat you like a nobody. If you are Kenny Omega and tomorrow you went to WWE, they're going to treat you like you're nobody. Even though Sting was a household name, even by WWE standards, they treated it like this is a guy in a glass jar, like a butterfly or an insect they were poking at. We don't know what to do with him. We don't know how, we don't know what his strengths are. We put Sting in the Stinger costume. We put him in the robe. We in the big jacket. We gave him the bat, but we had him go up against the entire authority backing Seth Rollins. And we didn't let Seth Rollins shine. And we had Seth Rollins botch a guy because they probably did not rehearse all the way through what they were wanting to do and what level of health Sting was at. Because Sting was probably supposed to win. They told him his career was over for good at that point, not at WWE. And they broke the fucker's back. And we were left with a sloppy ending. Instead of, and I'm not making a joke. I'm not making a sex joke. You know, I got those in the tank.
Sure. Let me, you want to finish your thought? Okay, because I want to get
They didn't know what to do with him. They didn't know what to do in that match. The spots were really bland. They did not play to the guy's strengths in the ring, and they didn't do enough for him on the mic. They gave him a free range, but then you also have to have, guys following him, know where they're going to be able to match his mic skills.
Okay,
Rollins couldn't match him.
Let me ask you a question, but I'm only going to give you 10 seconds to answer it because I want to hear Sin City Steve, okay?
Sure.
Do you not think that Sting should not have had any career with WWE at all?
You got to know what to do with him. You got to know what to do with him. You got to know how to write him. You got to know how to write with Sting. You got to know.
Sting shouldn't
have won. They didn't do him right. Every step of the way with every other promotion he was at, Sting knew how they knew how to use him. He went from the independent guy, he went from with Surface Sting, which is their version of Ultimate Warrior. They went to Sting showing up out of the blue with weirder makeup on in a black costume, kind of Goon and Crow thing. Maybe he's a 90s goth guy. And then he inserts himself into a leadership role at with NWO. You bring him a TNA, and now he's a father. He's a leading figure, but he's slowly passing the torch to other people. The match that he had with Jeff Hardy was supposed to be him passing the torch, supposed to be letting Jeff Hardy shine and get all these bangers of spots. And then Sting was forced to, to win the way he was. Everything was a progression where he's putting people over and putting himself over. And then in WWE,
Sin City Steve, man, let me get you your thoughts. What's your take on Steve? And if you want to challenge Rob on any of his things he's over here talking about, go ahead, man.
You know, it is funny that you mentioned Ultimate Warrior, because he actually started his wrestling career as a tag team partner of the Ultimate Warrior in the UWF, as a tag team called the Blade Runners.
Look at his gear. Look at his makeup, yeah. His face paint.
Yeah. And that was something, you know, that Sting kind of brought with him through the UWF into the NWA, and then obviously into WCW. I was in the building in 1995 when Sting won the WCW United States Championship in a tournament, and it was a really cool atmosphere to be a part of. At that point, I was 14 years old. I was admittedly a little stinger. This dude was awesome, man. Yeah. He was everything that every kid wanted to be, just because he was a badass, and it didn't matter if he was in the ring with somebody like a Vader, like, you know, somebody that he was giving up 300 pounds to. Dude, you knew that Sting was going to bring it, and he was going to give everything that he had. He was going to leave it all in the ring at all times, no matter what. And yeah. That's obviously, you know, something that he held true all the way until the very end of his career. Yeah. So being there for that, that was really cool to witness firsthand. Go back and watch his matches with Flair. Go back and watch his matches with Vader. Those were his career-making performances. I think the biggest problem that I had with how WWE used Sting for the Hall of Fame push was they got him over as, okay, here's this guy from WCW. He's the last guy from WCW. He's the final soldier, the last one. And then if you'll go back and watch the telecast of WrestleMania and you listen to the commentary during that Triple H and Sting match, literally you've got JBL sitting there the entire time just burying Sting, burying WCW, saying how WCW was officially dead, saying how finally WWE had won. And it becomes apparent exactly what this was to the people in charge at that time. This was, no punches pulled, this was them killing WCW and any last memory that people had of WCW. Right. And I think a lot of people...
Geriatric DX. All of his members looked old as fuck. X-Pac had three hairs left on the top of his head. And they were just running around the ring getting their asses kicked.
Yeah, it's crazy, but that, you know, it was going back and looking at everything through hindsight, it was very telling. A lot of people had a lot of ill will, and they were frustrated with WWE's portrayal of Sting and WCW. So that's one thing. The thing that I'll mention too is I was fortunate to be in the building for that AEW World Tag Team Title match. And see Sting win his final championship as a professional wrestler. That was an amazing scene to be able to take in because, you know, I was there, like I said, I watched him win a title in 1995, and then I see him win a title in 2024. So that is very, very telling.
Yeah.
The fact is, you know, a lot of people were upset online, oh, Sting didn't lay down, he didn't put over people on his way out, blah blah blah. Okay, could you imagine how the internet would have gone ape shit if Sting would have laid down and put over the Young Bucks of all people? Now, well, mind you, there was the uproar that his final opponent was the, you know, the Young Bucks.
Right.
That was determined by Sting as well.
But wait,
the difference is Sting wanted to lose the last match on the way out. So Tony Khan gave him the setting. They gave him his opponents. They gave him basically everything he wanted, except he wanted to lose and put them over on the way out. And they said, no, your legacy is more important. You're going to retire undefeated and retire a champion, which quite honestly.
But do you see what Vince Russo was saying about him? Vince Russo was saying he only cared about the check.
Absolutely.
Where the fuck did this has been, motherfucker, come up and go for all the matches that we described, me and Steve?
Yeah.
Does this sound like a guy who was just in it for the money? The guy put people over, and it was a generational talent putting over generational talent.
Let me ask you this. Okay, we don't have Matt Michaels here. Let me.
You know what? This is freaking ridiculous. They put him on AEW. A bunch of marks like him because it's the B team and we're rooting for the underdogs. But if he would have had the Q ratings that was available on WWE and he just followed the bumps and took all the spots he was told to take, then maybe, you know what? If the guy was so damn good, he wouldn't have got hurt by a freaking buckle bomb. But then he was out for 5 years with a broken freaking neck because he was so good. Wow.
Well, okay. So,
you know, you do a really good Matt Michaels for the record.
Yeah, he studies this guy pretty well.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Just don't say freaking. He actually cusses.
Well,
you know what, Rob, this fucking guy who sat there for years, collected the goddamn fucking check, and then did nothing, okay? Shows up at AEW when the timing's right, when he's ready to do it, and now you're going to tell me that this guy's the fucking Messiah?
Okay, now listen, what he probably would say, and all right, is the fact that how are you going to allow Sting to go run, have this 30-0 record at AEW? How do you have a record like that? And I would add this on. How do you put somebody over if with a record of 30-0? Put over normally requires an L somewhere.
Because Tony Khan is an idiot, and all he's doing is watching tapes from the 80s, and he's a fanboy mark who had his daddy's checkbook. So this fucking guy goes, we can't have Surfer Sting lose. That's why he put his loser sons in there to dress up as Surfer Sting and fucking Goth Sting, and that's the match we got. A goddamn squash match on the Young Bucks were fucking amazing.
Well,
am I closer?
You're getting closer. But okay. Listen, that's a real question, though. I'm curious because we want to say, and maybe Sting did put some people over pre-WWE, okay, because it seemed like he had a great career from all the different organizations that you named. But who could we say he put over then? We know he didn't put nobody over for WWE. I watched that. But for AEW, where did that happen? 30-0? Why build that up like that? I'm confused.
So the thing to keep in mind is if we're confining putting someone over as just losing to them, well, he put Triple H over in WWE.
But you know what?
But ultimately, the thing is, I feel that he did help make Darby Allin into more of a known name. Because if this guy was just doing his thing, keep in mind, Darby Allin was very, very similar to like a Jimmy Havoc that AEW brought in at the very beginning as well. What happened to Jimmy Havoc? Obviously, he had some allegations that came out about him, but he faded off into obscurity and he's probably working at a Staples somewhere, whatever. But the fact is,
he's working in a British version of Staples.
Yeah. So, but nonetheless, I don't think that, you know, you have to focus strictly on the win loss record to see that Sting put over the people that he was in the ring with.
So is Darby put over?
I think so. Okay. If you listen to the crowd ovation every time that Darby Allin comes to the ring, that guy gets a pop unlike anybody else on a consistent basis.
Okay.
In AEW. Now, obviously, you know, it all depends on, you know, if they choose to push certain people at certain times, whatever. But there are certain people that have always gotten a very, very good crowd reaction. And I believe that that's partially to do with Darby Allin being paired up with Sting and acting in that mentor role.
Okay.
The AEW run for Sting and the run to his retirement match, quite honestly, I thought was pulled off absolutely perfectly. I looking back at it, I wouldn't have had anybody lay down or I wouldn't have had Sting lay down for anybody. I think that they did it as they needed to. And can you put that up there? Yeah. You fucking popped me, Travis. Thank you. Holy shit. He says only person who hasn't put Darby over is his ex, being Gigi Dolin.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't extreme enough. if she took a dive through some glass, you know, that's the level that he needs. That's the level of
exactly
that he needs. Yeah. Somebody could take a bump or two.
Or more.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
That's well, called a good in-ring performance right there.
Well,
yeah, I wouldn't change anything about his AEW run.
When you look back at Sting, would you say that he would be somewhere he's on your Mount Rushmore? Would you go that far?
He's top 10. I can't say he's Mount Rushmore. Mm. I'd say he's top 10.
That's okay. You know what the problem is with asking that question?
Okay.
It's a generational question.
Yep.
Because if I said to you him, then somebody, you know, our elder or even Matt Michaels elder would say, well, you didn't put up Bruno Sammartino or Rio Steamboat. Or so it's a generational question.
Well, it could be, but what would you put him in your generation? That's what it comes down to. Does he make it for you? It's a personal thing.
My Mount Rushmore for this generation, which we'll say for 80s on. Fair?
Yeah.
80s on, you got Ric Flair.
Yep.
You got The Rock. Those two are definite. You could do Sting, definitely. And
so Sting would be on yours. Okay.
I could see that. Because he's so fucking prolific. And then that last spot's a tough one. Part of me wants to strongly say, just for the work and for being who he was, Triple H. And for no other reason than where are all of these other guys without Triple H? Because The Rock, obviously, but Sting and Ric Flair are prolific. They're in every promotion. They're in every promotion selling throughout time. The Rock is just instant click. The fourth one for me is difficult because I don't know who you put. I could not think of any modern person from AEW, New Japan Pro Wrestling.
No.
Couldn't.
Yeah.
No one yet.
I could not think of anyone WCW other than Sting or him. Because all the other guys are good, but they're not that good. Triple H is a guy who is crossed over into that management position and is still kind of, he doesn't put himself out there as much as Vince McMahon did in the Attitude Era, but he's another guy who's spanning timelines and still doing something where he has an impact.
The question I'm going to ask you, and I give you a few seconds for you guys to think about this, is what would have been the match for you with Sting
that as far as you know,
this is the best match ever?
Undertaker. Needed to happen. The Phenom versus the Icon, needed to happen. They, in fact, when they did that match with Seth Rollins, you still had a functional Undertaker. It would not have been the two of them in their prime, but it would have been what everybody wanted. It would have been the LeBron James versus Michael Jordan shut the hell up of all time match. They balked. This is what I was saying earlier. WWE went for what was happening in the moment versus making a legacy match. An in the moment match was chosen over a legacy match. Why do I need to have Sting with the belt? Why does Sting care about the belt? Why did Sting care about what? Something happening as a flash in the pan moment. Why does he care that Seth Rollins is a heel? Wait a minute. I'm in WWE. Do I have a functional Undertaker? Okay, I do. Am I the Icon? Yes. Is he the Phenom? Yes. We have a WrestleMania moment we can make, which is going to outstrip any belt that I could put on Sting's waist. And if I did, let's say he wasn't hurt. How long is he going to hold that belt for any significant amount of time? What, maybe two defenses? And then he gets screwed over and we just get rid of him? So there was no payoff. That's a weird thing to say. There was no payoff for winning the world championship belt. There's no payoff for him, no payoff for the fans. It looks great. Few little picture moments. They'll put him on a t-shirt. Chop WWE. Who cares?
Interesting. Sin City, is there a match for you that is there a match that you remember, Sting, that is your your greatest match? And do you have a match that you would have loved to see Sting have with someone else, maybe in his prime or outside of his prime?
So, I mean, I would have loved to have seen Undertaker. And there, you know, everybody would have loved to have seen that. So, I mean, that's the easiest one to say.
Sure.
Realistically, I would have liked to, if we're playing complete dream match here, mm-hmm. I would like to have seen Surfer Sting versus John Cena.
Mm. Okay.
Because if you look at it, yes, they're two very quintessential baby faces, but you're looking at two very different takes and very different ways of playing. I don't want to say the same character, but both characters were definitely in tune with the fan base. The kids loved them. I agree. Sting, Steamboat. Mm-hmm. Awesome. But yeah, Sting, John Cena would be a great one. But I'll tell you, man, the time that he spent his matches with Great Muta, I think really are underrated, because he was having some bangers in 1991, 1992 with the Great Muta. And mm-hmm. quite honestly, that was what opened the door for me to Japanese professional wrestling, was the Great Muta.
Oh, okay.
So as far as, you know, you mentioned matches that have stood the test of time, matches yeah. that, you know, are must watch.
Sure.
I would put those Muta matches up there, right along with the matches against Big Van Vader, also against obviously Ric Flair. And then also there was a really, really good match I think it was a Beach Blast or something like that, okay. between Cactus Jack and Sting. It was 92, and that was one of the core things for me too, as that helped get me introduced to Cactus Jack, which obviously I'm an extreme wrestling fan, so that kind of helped open the door for me on that front too. So
right.
that I think that's why I think that, you know, Sting has such an, you know, an emblematic career, because he did help open the doors for a lot of people and a lot of companies. You know, he was in WWE for a cup of coffee. He was in WCW. He was also in TNA and also in AEW. So, you know, if you look at it, he has been always trying to help the little guy. He's always right. been, you know, filling in wherever he can to help bring the entire bar of professional wrestling up.
So let me ask you that. Yeah. His wrestling career in terms of in the ring, done. Do you see any other capacity for him in professional wrestling at this point?
I would absolutely love for him to be on a creative board with AEW.
Okay.
And then, that's what was said at the media scrum,
yep.
where, you know, for all his faults, I mean, I do like that Tony Khan was like, look, I'm going to say this right now. I want you as part of our team. I yep. want, and he goes, thank you. But, thank you, Tony. Yeah, well, what do you want me to do on that team?
Yeah.
How many lines do I have to run through? wow.
Shit, so man, if nothing else, that'd be a reason to put him on the creative team so that he doesn't get into the stash.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, this is not going to be a Father James Mitchell story.
Oh, Jesus.
He is. They did this with, see, there's a risk in that. They did try to use him on TNA. So they brought in Hogan. Remember when Dixie Carter brought Hogan in? Mm-hmm. In about 2007, was it? 2008? She brought Hogan in. Maybe it was later. I apologize if I got my dates wrong. Mm-hmm. She brings Hogan in. Hogan brings in Flair. Flair and Hogan did the EVP thing back then. So what you see Nick and Matt Jackson do now, Hogan and Flair did that, where Hogan was just out of touch with the people, and they were hearing it from the fans. And so then Hogan turns, goes babyface, and they beat the shit out of him for it. Flair jumps in the ring. Great match, by the way.
Flair jumps in the ring to save Hogan. And at the end of the match, Hogan and Flair are crimson masks. They get their asses kicked by Fortune. Mm-hmm. Great match. Hogan is not even in his, he's not even Hollywood. He's not even a Hulkster. He's literally just in street clothes getting the shit kicked out of him by everybody on the TNA roster until Ric Flair goes to save him. And it's Ric Flair and Hogan versus the entire TNA locker room. They had some stupid over-the-top matches. And then you get Sting. And Sting came in there to manage for a while. And he unceremoniously left the company because they just had nothing to do with him. The last thing you see with Sting was Dixie Carter bought him a Rolex. And he's like, oh, this is a wonderful gift. Oh, wow. It's a Rolex. And then like they gave one like that to Hogan last week. Like, and then you never saw him again. So I don't know if he has the right instincts behind the scenes.
Interesting.
Steve, does that make sense?
I get it. I ultimately, I would still like to see what he could bring to the table because the
did stuff he do it that, now, though? Was he doing it all
the,
along?
The stuff that he was involved with, he had 100% creative control with. So the things that you saw him do with Darby were completely come up with by he and Darby. So the vignettes, the style of production that they used, the very kind of guerrilla type of presentation that they used in those vignettes.
Fucking stupid. Yes.
You hated those? The
freaking warehouse fight.
You hated that.
I did.
Okay. All right. It's all good. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I enjoyed those. I enjoyed those.
I said I hated
it. I mean, but hey, you know, it's
I wouldn't completely be surprised. Up to the I've viewer. Done this before. I've contradicted myself. Oh no, I think I hated it because it was too overproduced. And his gotcha. Bumps and everything were the overproduced element of it. But in the sense that he did something. But yeah, I did hate it for being overproduced.
So did in terms of this last match he had, you believe that everything, and this could be for you first, Sensity, that everything was done perfectly. There couldn't have been anything else that could have made this a more perfect way to send Sting out.
I wouldn't have had it done any other way. I mean, you had his sons show up and, you know, be a part of his entrance. Both representing two very, very distinct portions of his career in his same gear that he used. Both of his sons have actually done interviews since that show, and they've made mention that, you know, the Great American Bash jacket that one of his sons wore that played Surfer Sting. That was, I believe, from the Great American Bash 95 as well.
And by the way, what does that look like today?
It was worn out there on the pay-per-view. No. I mean,
who dresses like that now? Cody.
Yeah.
Cody.
Yep.
It took me a long time. I was watching this. This is the funny thing about wrestling. If you're a newer fan, you're seeing things for the first time. You're going, oh, wow, that's weird. Cody dresses like, Okay. I get it now. And you build an appreciation of the guy. You even if you're a newbie to it, you're looking at this and going, oh, wait, well, if that was Sting a long time ago, then all the floodgates open up in your brain and you're like, wow, all of these other people were copying him and paying homage.
Rob, shout out to Andre, who's just chimed in. He says Sting may be too nice of a guy for the business, and AEW felt like the first time he was properly used for an extended period of time since pre-Hogan, WCW, NWA. Sting being too nice of a guy for the business, you think that's a true statement there?
No, first of all, I don't get it's the pre-Hogan because Sting was there was Surfer Sting. Even I, as a casual for WCW, was aware of Surfer Sting. He was on all the video games. He was everywhere. There was an understanding of who he was. But Sting as the Crow Sting is, he's never not had that face paint since. He evolved it. But he's been that guy since. Never once did he decide, I'm going to cut my hair into some blonde bullshit and run around. And he never did that.
Yeah.
Even when he still had his physique in TNA
and you know throughout TNA, he wore that Sting costume that you saw his son wear. The Wolfpack Sting costume was what he wore the whole way through TNA going forward. It's only until he got to AEW that he was wearing, you know, truck driver Sting. But you know, it looks like he
settled down, Cornette.
Yeah, it looks like he went to a ring. You know what? Let me go wear. We'll call it Carhartt Sting. That's what he looked like he was wearing. Duluth Trading Sting. What the fuck was that? I'm like, dude, wait a minute. Ric Flair's flabby ass got there and did on a Crockett promotion with his arms flapping in the wind like Dumbo and wrestled. You're trying to tell me, Steve Borden, that you look that fucked up your body? Dude, I'll get out there with no shirt on. I don't give a shit, you know? I ain't going to do it here because you guys don't deserve it. If you want that, you got to go on my Cameo. Excuse me, this is Naked Donald Trump, and we're going to say a happy birthday to Sid City Steve. He wants to see the Trump titties.
Oh, boy. Jesus.
No, thank you.
Listen.
I'm going to put fake titties. They'll be knee knockers. I'll make
them. Oh, boy. It seems like
Trump's got pancake titties.
It seems like Sting, man, has had one hell of a career. And like I say, I hopefully to live a long life will have a moment to take some time and go back to some old pro wrestling that I missed. Because I know there's a lot of man,
DJ, the next time you go on one of your fucking cruises,
just load up some Sting matches
and just watch Sting. What'd you do? I went and watched Sting all weekend. Weren't you on a cruise to Bermuda? No,
yeah, it doesn't matter. Sting!
Not allowed to host his show anymore until Sting comes back. I'll even put it with Matt Michaels and his fucking wonky internet. You know what, Rob? You're fucking. And another thing,
that's so funny.
Oh shit.
No, for real though. I appreciate it, guys, to have you on to get your thoughts on Sting. And like I say, I was definitely familiar with him, but didn't know that his career, although I knew it went far back, you know, to hear that some of the great matches were of course pre 1995 or so.
Oh yeah.
I was nowhere near that time. You know, it's just sad, you know, and it's like, why would I be a loyalist to a WWE? I don't know. But at that time, that's all it was. I'm like, all these other fakers coming around, I'm not paying them no attention.
You got indoctrinated to the propaganda, man.
I guess so. But hey, that's the great thing about doing this podcast. I think almost damn near 5 years or 6 years we've been doing it. I've now opened up a lot more Impact Wrestling. Oh,
definitely.
A lot more Impact Wrestling.
Rob obviously took issue with something you said there.
Yeah. A lot of Impact Wrestling I got a chance to see. And of course, I watched some AEW here and there and getting back into it and all. But I've watched some past WCW, but I have a lot more to go to try to catch up with to everything that took place. So
don't click the back button.
Yeah, don't click the back button, Rob. Come on. But yeah, so that's all I was pretty much saying is Sting looked like Sting's definitely had a great career. And I guess he's gonna be missed for you guys who really grew up watching him for so many years. That had to be a moment this past week at Revolution. So I wish him luck in whatever he chose to do.
You know what it was good about that with Sting is there is a feeling of completion for the audience and the fans.
Yeah.
Like when Ultimate Warrior came back, it was like for a dinner theater thing, WWE Hall of Fame. And then he passes the next day and you're like, wow, a lot of these guys don't get to have a career go to fruition. They are stuck in a generation and they never get to leave that generation.
Yeah.
Sting is like Kiss. What did Kiss do? In the 70s, they were a punk rock band, but they were a heavy metal band dressed up like demons. In the 80s, they took off the makeup and became an 80s boy band. In the 90s, they dressed up like Pearl Jam. And in the 2000s and on, they did a hybrid of everything they ever did. And they had a start, beginning, and end, full circle. That's Sting. Sting is the Kiss of professional wrestling.
Nice. Okay.
Well played. No.
Except for the fact where I hit the back button, making fun of Matt Michaels.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I'm linked to YouTube. I tried to share Lockdown 2009 YouTube. Google it. That's what I was trying to share, and it went to.
Yeah. If you guys go to our YouTube page, look like Rob put up a few links of some matches to
Lockdown. Check out.
Yeah. For Sting. Look at Sting versus Mick Foley, Lockdown 2009. I can only imagine what that was. That seemed like that probably wasn't.
It was a Hell in a Cell style match.
Okay.
There was great spots, a lot of bleeding, and you have Mike Tenay doing the calling. Mike Tenay, coming out of WCW, the Professor, was really the voice of early TNA. And Jeremy Borash, as your ring announcer, was the best ring announcer they ever had. I don't know what became of him, but no one was better than Mike Tenay. You had other guys, Don West, that were good. But Mike Tenay was fucking great. And those early TNA matches, that was like, if you could not get Jim Ross, those mid-2000s TNA matches, those calls,
you're
like what The Rock does now. You're like, your hairs on the back of your neck are on end because the way they're calling those matches.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ Almighty, it just went to the fucking cage. Oh, God. And you're like,
oh, my Lord. Oh. All right. Well, listen, let's wrap up. We'll give our final thoughts for the week. And we'll go from there. Want to thank everybody for hanging out with us. Thank you, Travis, Andre, American Bam Bam, a few others popped on. Thanks. We always appreciate you. Come back next week. We'll be back to hopefully some 3-count topics, which will take place for that. And of course, our wrestling talk, which will kicks off everything. And well, of course, we'll have a lot to talk about because, you know, we got some big business to attend to, right? So there's that. With that, let's jump over final thoughts. I'm going to go over to you, Sin City Steve. What do you want to tell the good folks out there?
All right. Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, very special shout out to all the brave men and women serving this country, whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, repsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, and general energy needs. Again, that's repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 15%.
All right. Thank you, Sin City. Rob, you got some shows or anything you want to promote?
I want to tell you that Barack Obama is going to be prominently featured at Notoriety.
Oh,
it's Friday night. And go look that up for Shock Collar Comedy. So you're going to get to watch a lot of comedians with dog collars on. And if their jokes are dog shit bad, you get to shock the shit out of them. But here's how fucking
good shit. I am.
Are you serious?
Yes. Here's how fucking good I am. This will be my third one. I wasn't scheduled to be on this one. The host called me and said, do you want to be on it? Do you want to be the opening act or do you want the collar? I said the fucking opening act. I'm the president of the United States. God damn it. Fuck are you talking about? Put a dog collar on me. And go look it up. Shock Collar Comedy. You can see my full set as Donald Trump. And this will be the second time I appear in a major venue as Barack Obama.
Okay.
Man. So, you know, together we're going to have a legacy much like that of Sting, where I put face paint on. And try to entertain the people out there.
Yeah, okay.
For America.
For America, right. Love it, love it. All right, y'all. Thanks for hanging out with me. We'll
see says he loves my impersonations. These are the very best impersonations that he's ever seen. Never, ever has a bald white guy ever done voices this good. I even do the Vince McMahon better than the other guy.
Oh, boy.
Check it. You're fired. See how good I did that? I did it so much like Vince McMahon that they're trying to sue me. That's how good I did the impersonation. and they're suing me for sexual harassment. That's how good my Vince McMahon was. They said I gave some chick pills. I don't need to take any pills to get it up, okay?
This Friday, notoriety check about y'all. We'll see y'all. Take care.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.